VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And welcome to Crosstalk on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we live in some pretty tough times. It's easy to get discouraged. And today's program is designed to encourage you to take your eyes off the temporal and to focus on the eternal. And I'd like to begin today by just reading a few verses from the Gospel according to John, chapter 14, where he writes, "Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me." We have Jesus speaking in this passage. He said, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also." Well, later in the chapter, Jesus said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." So amidst the troubling times today, we're going to turn our thoughts heavenward as we focus on some of the great hymns of the faith that focus on heaven. Joining us today, we welcome Ace Collins. He's an award-winning author of more than 80 books, has written books from biographies to children's books, books on history, culture, and faith. With us today discussing his book, Stories Behind the Songs and Hymns About Heaven. Ace, nice to have you with us here today.
It is a joy to be with you all as well. I hope that your weather, wherever you're listening, is as beautiful as ours is in Arkansas right now.
So, okay.
Nice, crisp, cool fall day.
Well, we're still looking at some of the melting early snows that have come to our area. there's all kinds of hymns with multiple different themes. You've chosen to write a book with a focus on heaven. Ace, what prompted your interest in this particular theme?
Well, people who know that I've written a lot of stories behind books, everything from the stories behind the best loved songs of Christmas and Christmas traditions to the stories behind Elvis's number one songs. And, you know, and over the course of the years, I had written enough of the books that I decided I probably wouldn't write another one. And I probably wouldn't have except my agent, Greg Johnson, came to me and after leaving his mother-in-law's funeral and called me and said, "Have you ever thought about doing the stories behind songs about heaven?" And I really thought about it and decided that it was something I was almost being called to do. 3 years ago, three and a half years ago, my father died of cancer. And when I was by his bedside, you know, there are things that you want to say or things you want to do or things that you need as crutches that you may not have. My mother, a year later, died of Alzheimer's. I wish I had written this book in truth before that happened because the stories that I gleaned from these wonderful songs and the people who wrote them and would have helped me a great deal going through those times. And I began to see this as a book that was made to order, if you will, for people who were facing what I faced, and that was the loss of a loved one, to have an opportunity to read in the wake of that loss the inspiration behind these songs and stories, because they not only give you a better perspective on what is ahead for a Christian. As I was at a devotional with college kids last night, I said, there are no winners and losers once you've accepted Christ. You've already won. So that's part of the story in this, the reward for winning. But the other part of it that I found amazing is the people that wrote most of these songs were going through incredibly troubling times when they wrote them. And secondly, the focus on many of these songs is also about bringing a bit of heaven to earth. And you do that through the way you live, the way you reach out to people. Living out Matthew 35 through 45, reaching out to the least of these, your spirit, your actions, your heart, your soul, your attitude. And these songs, I think, do a tremendous amount to not only bring us a glimpse of heaven, but also challenge us to bring that bit of heaven down to earth. To those who do not know Jesus or those who are struggling with their faith.
Yeah.
So it was a growing experience for me to write this book, and it's a book now I wish I'd written years ago so I could have answered some of those questions when I was going through some tough times in my life.
Well, certainly.
By the way, we have 30 songs in the book. I wrote a lot more stories than that, and the publisher cut them, Baker cut them to 30 to fit the format that they needed. But what's fascinating is they came to me and said, you know, which ones do you want to cut? I didn't want to cut any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came back and I said, I'll tell you what, y'all make the decision, but there's two things that have to stay in place. The book has to open with Amazing Grace. Excuse me, the book has to open with Wayfaring Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
It has to contain American Grace. And at the end, the last song in the book has to be Victory in Jesus.
Victory in Jesus.
Those were my qualifiers when we got to the editing process.
So when we think about death, there is this pain of loss, the pain of separation, and we remember even Jesus who wept when Lazarus had died. But for a believer in Christ, not only do we have this pain of separation and loss, which is there, but we also have this joy of reunion, and that's an important truth that you bring about and that we can grasp as we read through your book.
And I think the reunion is the great hope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is something that allows us to really live in the faith here on earth, and also to let people go. When my mother was dying of Alzheimer's, she no longer knew who I was. But ironically, there was a girls' social club from our local university where my wife was chair of the education department who went by and sang at the facility where she was being cared for beautifully by the staff for Alzheimer's. And even though my mom didn't know who I was anymore, when they sang Amazing Grace or Victory in Jesus and these other songs these girls did, my mom sang every word with her.
Oh, yeah.
With them.
Wow.
So that message even resonated through the darkness of a disease that steals your memories. And that is how strong this message of hope and reunion is in these songs. And I think it's the anchor that sustains us even when we lose everything else.
Well, as you mentioned, there are three songs that were qualifiers for this book. And the very first song actually in this book is Wayfaring Stranger. Now, many see this song as focusing more on the toils of life, but this song really takes a look toward eternity, doesn't it?
It does, because the toils of, you know, this is a person who has experienced the worst of times. If you read the lyrics in this incredible American folk song that probably dates back 200 years, maybe 250 years, there are some who believe it's based on an African-American spiritual, others who believe that it's based on an experience of a Native American. Whatever it is based on, whoever it is, this person knew firsthand what it was like to be rejected on earth. This person knew firsthand what it was like to have people of faith ignore them. They were the invisible people as they wandered from place to place, hoping and praying that someone would be good to them. But by the same token, their personal faith endured their hardship. When you get to the chorus, you know, they're looking forward to heaven where they're going to meet their mother and their father and their loved ones. They have that assurance that as imperfect as this life is,
mm-hmm.
that there is perfection waiting for them. And it's that hope. It is that promise that propels them through life. And I thought that was a wonderful way to start this book. It also, this song offers us a challenge. You know, I mentioned Matthew 25, 35 through 40 a few seconds ago. Well, this is a song that challenges us as Christians to live that out. I think we spend way too much time looking in the mirror and none of the time looking out the window. And if we look out the window, we see the opportunities we have to bring a little bit of heaven to earth. How do we do that? We first do that by offering help and compassion and hope and love and acceptance. And that's what Jesus did. You know, Jesus constantly brought a little bit of heaven to earth when he reached out to the lepers or the woman at the well, and the little children who gathered around him, if you will. And the lessons go on and on and on
mm-hmm.
from the Bible. Well, this is an opportunity for us to do that too, to take people who are unloved and don't know that love of that is given through Christ and share that love with them. This song challenges us to do that.
Yeah, indeed. That final verse, I'll soon be free from every trial. This form shall rest beneath the sun. I'll drop the cross of self-denial and enter in that home with God. With us today, Ace Collins, and you mentioned also a song, and it really has universal recognition, Amazing Grace. But for those not familiar with John Newton, he truly experienced the grace that he wrote about. Tell us his story.
John Newton was born to only child, to a mother who was somewhat of an invalid and a father who was a sailor. Father was often gone. mother attempted to raise the child best that she could, but Newton was really left to his own devices even as a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old boy. Grew up to be kind of a hooligan. By the time he was 10 or 11, his mother had passed away, and he joined a merchant ship as a cabin boy. By the time he was 12 or 13, he could out-drink, outside, and out-cuss any man on that ship. His reputation grew so bad for violence and drunkenness that by the time he was 18 or 19, the only jobs he could find were on ocean-going vessels that transported slaves. Essentially, he became a slave trader. And there's nothing lower during that time in the early 1800s than being a, or excuse me, 1700s than being a slave trader. And he was coming back on a trip in 1779. And they were caught in the midst of a hurricane. And he was down actually reading in a cabin, unaware of what was going on. They brought him back up, and they knew his mother had taught him to pray as a child, and asked him, "Would you pray for us?" Newton did. He prayed. And the storm went away, and they were saved. Now, most people believe, if when they've heard the story, that Newton immediately transformed his life within a year or two, was preaching in churches, sharing his testimony, and everything was good. That wasn't the case. When he got back to shore with his money, he immediately went to the nearest bar and gambled and drank some more. So his life was not immediately transformed. It took several years in a meeting with the Wesley brothers, Charles and John, and the others to finally take this man from what he was and transform him into what he would become. What did he become? He became a great pastor in England. He became a man who one day felt he needed to tell his congregation his testimony, and he did it in verses, in poetry, if you will. It was transformed into a song, went all over the world, and was also a song that was a lead move in the movement for abolition, to get rid of slavery. When it got to the United States people liked the song, didn't particularly care for the music that went with it, and changed it and married it with new music, either Kentucky Harmony or Virginia Harmony, depending on which part of the country you live in, can claim the tune here. And then they added a verse. We don't know who added it, but the verse was, "When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun."
Yeah.
I think the great message of the song is not just about that ending verse of "we're going to heaven," but it's about transformation. And it also is about the fact that some of us get impatient. We witness to somebody, we help them, and we think they are instantly change. Even when you realize there is a God, even when you realize that Jesus died on the cross, it in many cases doesn't change all facets of a person's behavior. Sometimes it takes longer. John Newton is a classic example of a man who grew into being and acting like a Christian over a 4 or 5 year period of time before he fully embraced who he should be. And I think that's a lesson for all of us who are impatient, waiting, well, when is John going to start acting like a Christian? It takes a while to grow up in the faith. It really does.
We got to take a break here. Ace Collins is our guest today, author of Stories Behind the Songs and Hymns About Heaven. We'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are animals more and more intelligent as they march up the evolutionary tree?
Chris, let's get this straight. Evolution did not happen. There is no valid evolutionary tree. There are no higher animals. It stands to reason in evolution that the apes would be the most intelligent of the animals, only bested by mankind. While it is true that apes have a larger brain than do, say, toads, there are a lot of animals thought to be lower on the evolutionary tree which are quite intelligent. A number of insects can do things that would astound you. Now even a fish has been discovered that can use tools in digging its burrow. Chris, there is no hierarchy of the animals leading to man. Each of the animals were created separately, after their kind, each with unique abilities. Chris, it makes so much sense when you go back to Genesis for your starting point.
You can find us on the web at www.icr.org.
stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. Ace Collins is the author. He's with us today here on Crosstalk. We're going to delve into a few more of the songs in here. We'll also be telling you how you can obtain a copy of this tremendous resource to be a blessing to others, a source of comfort to someone who has lost a loved one, and certainly a book that will bless your heart as well. We're just talking about Amazing Grace here just a bit ago, an interesting song, which there's definitely this progression, starting out with one being a wretch all the way till that final verse of when we've been there 10,000 years, and folks, then it's only just begun. Well, we're going to talk about another song that you produce in here, write about its history and background. I'd like you to introduce us to Carrie Ellis, a person who couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, but she sure could write. Tell us about her and this great hymn, Face to Face.
Carrie Ellis was encouraged to write by her parents growing up. It was part of her creativity. As a matter of fact, you know, she came from a large family and was the second of seven children. The other six could sing beautifully. She literally couldn't carry a tune. What she did have, though, was a gift for verse. And everything that she thought or every experience that she had, she tended to write down in poetry. It was for her own good. You know, yes, she had a few that she sent off that got published, but the tone deaf Carrie was not expecting to ever be a songwriter. She was not ever expecting to actually have people be reading her thoughts and her expression, you know, a generation after she died, much less, you know, 100 years later. And I think that Carrie was someone who, because of being raised in the church, and she went to the local Presbyterian church and went in the 1860s and 70s when she was growing up, you know, two or three times a week, she probably knew Bible stories inside out. One of the stories that she really knew was the prodigal son. And, you know, in the process of thinking about faith, she thought what it would be like for this unworthy son to come home and face his father. And it had to be a series of mixed emotions. I mean, in one case, you're facing a father who you have rejected, who you've mistreated, who you have left behind supposedly to never see again. And you have to fall on your knees and ask forgiveness and just to be a slave, a servant. And yet this father, who should have, you know, really come down hard on you, opened his arms, threw a banquet, and accepted you. And that is the foundation for what she thought it was going to be like to see Jesus face to face in heaven. And that formed the basis of a poem that she wrote called Face to Face. She realized that she had something special, and she sent it off to a friend, Grant Tular, and he looked at those lyrics and realized there was a hymn there, and he sat down at the piano and married it to a melody that he had already written. And within 10 years, it was being sung in churches all over the United States. I think the magic in this song, and each one of these songs has a bit of spiritual magic, if you will. If you don't like that term, then the inspiration, the thing that takes root in your soul and grows with these particular songs, is the fact that it has to be overwhelming when we finally get to see Jesus face to face.
Yeah,
and I think the only thing that we can actually compare that to is what the disciples must have felt after the resurrection.
Mm.
Those who met Jesus after the resurrection were seeing what they finally fully understood was the Son of God face to face. They were looking at the face of God. And imagine how overwhelming that be. That's another promise that we have when we get to heaven. And I think that may be the biggest reward we have. We talk about reuniting with loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine seeing Jesus face to face. And Carrie captured that beautifully in these lyrics.
Face to face I shall behold him far beyond the starry sky. Face to face in all his glory I shall see him by and by. You mentioned thinking about the prodigal son, and then you have a song in there about somebody who followed a life much like the prodigal son, Stuart Hamblin, who wrote a different style of song. We hear This Old House.
This Old House is a great story. Stuart Hamblin was very much, Stuart Hamblin was lucky to to be alive when he went to a Billy Graham crusade and got saved in the late 40s. This was a man who literally closed the bars at night and often, and this was in Hollywood. He grew up in Oklahoma, migrated across the country and from Texas and other places and ended up, you know, in California. This was an old ranch hand, if you will, who had a gift for writing songs. And when he migrated to California, his songwriting gift made him a lot of money. And he was writing songs for motion pictures. He had a radio show. But the problem was he'd take all that money and go to the bars at night and then spend it. And then the local radio station that where he hosted the program would have to bail him out the next morning so he could be on the air.
Wow.
And eventually he walked the aisle after his wife took him to a Billy Graham crusade, and it changed and transformed his life.
Hmm.
He became a man who was immersed in the spirit, so much so that his radio show changed, the way he wrote songs changed, and everything else. And this Texas-born Hamlin was actually, on a camping trip and a hunting trip with John Wayne and several others. You know, he was in his early 40s, and he topped a ridge. This is 1953, and they saw a cabin. They were in the Sierra Nevadas, and they saw a cabin. And he said, man alive, let's go over and find out what's in that cabin. He had an innate curiosity. The others didn't want to go because it was a long, long hike down a valley and back up another side of a mountain to get there. But they went anyway because Stuart wouldn't leave them alone. They got there, and they heard a dog inside whimpering. They went inside the cabin, and there was a man who was dead in a bed. He had died by himself in this old cabin. Beside his bed was a well-marked, well-worn Bible. Around the cabin were pictures of children and what they assumed was his wife as well, who obviously was no longer alive. And they got pieces of his life in this small room this one-room cabin. Well, they buried him and they went on. They took the dog with them, by the way. And when they got back to L.A., Stuart Hamlin thought about this man's life and was going to write a sad song, but ended up writing a really happy song. And the song was "This Old House," and you know, ain't going to need this house no longer. Ain't going to need this house no more.
Yeah.
Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor. You know, and it was about a man who had nothing really in this cabin, but he had everything because he was about to go to a new house, and that house was in heaven. And the song really illustrates. By the way, it went to number one on the pop charts by Rosemary Clooney. It's been recorded countless times since then. But this song illustrates how we get so caught up in our worries on earth about the little things that ultimately don't matter, that we forget about the spiritual things that do matter. We forget about helping people. We forget about reaching out. And Hamlin is a classic example of a man who was saved and realized that there was so much to do here on earth before he got to heaven. And it wasn't those little things like making sure everything in your house was perfectly straight or the crease in your pants was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It was about reaching out and sharing the story of the gospel with others. And that led him to write, "Open up your heart and let the sun shine in. Until then, your first day in heaven." It is no secret what God can do, and so many others incredible songs. But "This Old House," I think, is one of the most unique takes on heaven and also life here on earth that I've ever heard.
Amen. Ace Collins, our guest here today on Crosstalk. And in just a moment, folks, if you want to have handy a sheet of paper, a pen, or a pencil, we'll tell you how you can obtain this stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. I do want to make sure we get a couple more in here today. And one of these, you mentioned that so many of these songs and hymns came from difficult times that the writer was experiencing or the times in which they lived. And many of us are familiar with the song "Mansion Over the Hilltop" by author Ira Stanfill. But he wasn't necessarily experiencing a cakewalk, was he?
Ira, you know, really had a tough life. We've got a couple of his songs in here. And when he was going through life, this man who is, you know, you look back at what I consider gospel music, and when you look at Southern gospel music, Ira Stanfill, Stanfill Brumley, Albert Brumley, and Eugene Bartlett, all of who have songs in there are probably the crown princes, if you will, of this genre. They write music so beautifully. Stanton was a man who traveled the world, but who lost a great deal in the process. You know, he didn't have a perfect life. He didn't have a perfect marriage. He didn't have all the things that were supposed to be perfect if you were following Christ. He was constantly challenged by heartache. His marriage was on the verge of collapse when he went to hear a speaker at a gospel event in Dallas, Texas. And this speaker was a businessman. This is at the end of World War II. It's after the Great Depression, and this businessman gave his testimony. And everybody thought, well, this is going to be this glorious, happy story of success in business. And it wasn't. It was about a man who had success. The Great Depression came, and he started to lose his business. His manufacturing plants began to shut down. He was having to lay employees off. He was getting to the point where he was about to lose his mansion, his chauffeur-driven cars and everything else. And he was so depressed one day because he was seeing the end that he drove out into the country in his car and just kept driving and driving until the concrete roads turned to gravel and then bedrock, and came up on a house and he thought the house was vacant. It was in such bad repair. And a little girl, you know, with kind of a tattered dress came out and asked him if he was lost. What a great question.
Yeah.
It's because anybody who came down to this road was always lost.
Had to be.
Yeah. And he said, well, yeah, I kind of am. And he got to talking to this girl. And this little child, he asked her, kind of, he wanted to know how she could be so happy. And she looked at him and smiled, and she said, pointed to a hill, and she said, my dad's going to build us a house up on that hill, a new house up on that hill. And in the midst of the Great Depression, when this family had nothing, this little girl had the faith in her father that he would fulfill his promise and build that house for that family. That caused this man to turn around, go back to Dallas, Texas, and tell his employees, you hang in there with me. We are going to make this work. And they did, and his businesses thrived once more as the Great Depression wound down, and he went through into World War II, and he gave so much of his possessions after that to ministries and to beneficial causes. And he talked about those blessings. And that story of that little girl impressed upon Stanpill, who was going through the breakup of his marriage, and he knew that was going to cost him dearly as a Christian evangelist. And it wasn't his fault. It was his wife's fault. And yet he wrote this song, and it would renewed his faith, and how many people's other faiths. If the little girl could believe that her father was going to build a mansion, certainly Stanpill believed that the promise of God had something really better for him down the road here on earth and waiting for him in heaven as well.
Wow. I've got a mansion just over the hilltop. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. Following the break, we'll tell you how you can obtain a copy. We've gone through four stories. There are 30 in this book, stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
From Ray Comfort and Living Waters comes the dramatic film Audacity, tackling a very divisive issue today, homosexuality. Challenged by a co-worker to defend his convictions about homosexuality and same-sex marriage, Peter has to consider if he has the courage to stand for what he believes, even at the risk of losing a friendship. How will he respond when faced with a harrowing life or death experience? Audacity uses a unique approach to address a very contemporary issue and challenges the viewer to reach out and approach the greatest spiritual need everyone faces. Audacity is a 55-minute powerful dramatic film that will impact your life. Get your copy of Audacity for a donation of $5, or 5 copies for a donation of $18, 10 copies for $25 when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. Ace Collins is the author, and he's with us today on Crosstalk. And I just want to mention that this is a hardcover book. Folks, we've covered four of the 30 in this book. It's over 230 pages. Featuring stories behind 30 songs and hymns about heaven as hardcover. It retails for $14.99, but as I mentioned, our VCY bookstore is featuring this as one of their books of the month, and as such, they worked out a special arrangement with the publisher, and they are offering it through November 30th. Through November 30th, this book at 50% off its regular price. So through November 30th, it's $7.50. Plus any applicable tax or shipping. It's available. You can go to vcy.com and order it online, vcy.com, or call directly to the bookstore at this number, 414-463-1770, 414-463-1770, or 1-888-722-4829. That's 1-888-722-4829. If you get a busy signal, just call them back. They'll be open until 6 p.m. Central Time this evening. And if you can't get through in all that time, try again tomorrow. But vcy.com will be your quickest way, or call the number 414-463-1770 or 1-888-722-4829. Again, they only have this available at this reduction until November 30th. It's a great Christmas gift. It's not only good for music lovers, it's great for pastors, hospice workers, counselors, a source of comfort to someone who has lost a loved one, a source of comfort for elderly as well. Stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. Ace, you mentioned that you had three requirements, three of the many songs you wrote that you wanted, one to begin in the book, dealing with that wayfaring stranger. You wanted Amazing Grace in this book, and then you also wanted Victory in Jesus. And that's how you conclude this book. Tell us why you wanted this to be included, why this was so important, and then to close off the book with this song, and let's learn about Victory in Jesus.
I think it's the most powerful story in the book, and there's some great stories. I mean, you know, you take Gospel Ship, it was written by an American slave. You take others that were written by Civil War veterans, you know, and you take books, songs written by Isaac Watts and Charles Wesley, you know, and John Wesley. And yet here's this song that stands out amongst all of them. Eugene Bartlett was one of the great songwriters of all time. And not just gospel songs. We know him for so many of his great gospel songs, but and we know him for his publishing company that he founded to publish many of these songs. But he was a very positive, upbeat person who liked to make people laugh. Within the last month, there was a country music special on PBS that looked at the history of country music. One of the people they looked at was little Jimmy Dickens. His biggest hit was Taking Old Cole Tater and Wait. That was written by Eugene Bartlett. He was the kind of guy who just made people smile. And most of his hymns are that way, too. They're uplifting hymns that you sing with a smile on your face. Well, Bartlett's faith was never really tested, people thought. They, you know, many of the people, doubters around him, said that if Eugene Bartlett ever had anything bad happen to him, that his faith would fall apart. I mean, they just didn't, they saw him as having never been challenged, and so they didn't know how much faith and how deep his faith really was. This is a man who sang for presidents. He sang for kings and queens. He traveled the world. He was coming back to Siloam Springs, Arkansas, his home, one day. And on the way back home, this man, who was very young at that time, middle-aged, had a stroke. And they carried him off of the train. It's just after the Great Depression, just before World War II. And they took him back to his home, and the man who had traveled the world, who literally, his life had no limits, was now stuck in one room in a bed. And the doctors didn't even think he would talk again, much less walk. He eventually learned how to talk in a very halting format. And as he grew a little stronger, his friends, his doubters, if you will, waited for him to shape his hand into a fist and shake it at God. Eventually, he shook his hand. He actually did form that hand into a fist, jammed a pencil into it, sat up in bed, and began to write. It was an effort to write. This was a man who had, in the past, had written a song in 15, 20 minutes. You know, it took him that long to write a word now. And it took two months, mind you, for him to write the last song he would ever write, a song that would be published after he died. The song is Victory in Jesus. If you read the lyrics to the song, you can actually see what he's going through, because it talks about being in poor health. It talks about being feeble. It talks about being weak. But the one thing that never weakened when his body gave up was his faith. It was as clear, it was as strong, and it was dynamic as it ever was. And for a man who had once had it all, including a vigorous, incredibly interesting life where he traveled the world, to be confined in one room, and in that one room, in a place where he could barely move, find the inspiration and the faith to write Victory in Jesus, is one of the greatest testimonies that I have ever heard, ever read, or ever will hear or read. And you can't sing Victory in Jesus ever the same way again once you know what Bartlett was going through when he wrote.
Wow. 1 Corinthians 15:57, but thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. It's a victory that he experienced in his life. Friends, these are tremendous stories, and we'd like to encourage you to get a copy of the book, Stories Behind the Songs and Hymns About Heaven. By the way, our call-in number, let's open our lines. If you have a guest question you'd like to ask of our guest today, Ace Collins, our number is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. He has written about so many, 30 different ones in this book, Roll Jordan Roll, In the Sweet By and By, He Keeps Me Singing, Beyond the Sunset, and Peace in the Valley, We're Marching to Zion, I'll Fly Away, The Unclouded Day, several other songs in here as well. Again, it's available through our VCY bookstore, 1-888-722-4829. If you'd like to call, ask a question, maybe you've been challenged, inspired through the program today, our call-in number today on Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. Ace, what impact are you wanting this book to have upon the readers?
I think there's several different ways that I hope and pray will impact readers. If you're healthy, if you're alive like I am, if you're going through life as I go through life, I hope it will encourage you to bring a bit of heaven to earth. In other words, I hope when you read these stories and you see what people are going through, that you will look out your window and find people that you can help, projects you can get involved in at church, in the community, or other places where you can be Jesus here on earth, where you can actually introduce people to faith, where you can be the hands and feet that God wants you to be. So that is one element of hope that I have for people who read this book. The next element is, if you're going through a time where you're sitting beside the bed of a loved one who is dying or who is suffering from Alzheimer's, as my mother did, I hope that this book can be something that can comfort you and also inspire you that this life is just temporal and there's something much greater waiting. And if you're the person going through that time, I have a friend right now that I sent a copy to, who's 34 years old and has four girls between the ages of 4 and 8, and who is less than a month to live thanks to cancer. If you're going through something like that, I think this book is also something that can help you as well and inspire you, because there are people in these pages who have been going through some pretty horrific things and ultimately found faith in the moments when they had been dealt cards that were just horrible to play. And so I think, you know, those are three of the different elements. But I found as I wrote it that it also applies to people who are doing devotionals.
Yeah.
It applies to pastors who are looking for something in messages, particularly pastors who are having to preach funerals. There are so many different ways that this book can be used, and you don't realize that when you're writing it and researching it.
Yeah.
You're thinking, okay, I'm just telling the stories behind these songs. I'm trying to place them in a narrative style that will entertain people. And entertainment is a good word, folks, because you have to entertain people as a writer if you're going to challenge them and if you're going to inform them. Nobody wants to read a boring book. And so the primary goal, initially speaking, is to write something that's interesting enough that people want to keep reading it. And so, you know, there has to be that in that well is also. And finally, another part of it that I think is, if you're interested in music and you're interested particularly in music history, this book, because of the stories behind it, there's just tidbits of wisdom in here that are so much fun. I love, you know, Isaac Watts. Go back 500 years and you got Watts as a teenager. Imagine this. This is the greatest hymn writer of all time. He's 16 years old. He's sitting at the table after church, and he tells his dad, said, well, what did you think of the service? And Isaac Watts, as a 16-year-old, 500 years ago, looked at his dad and said it was boring. I mean, you know, this is the greatest songwriter of all time. He's looking at his dad, who's in charge of the service, and saying, wow. Dad, it's boring.
Wow.
People are falling asleep. You know, and his dad looks at him and said, what? He said, we only sing from the Book of Psalms. We only have six tunes we sing to. Nobody is inspired, Dad. And his dad looked at him, and rather than grounding him or yelling at him or screaming at him or punishing him, looked and said, Isaac, if you think you can do it better, then find a way to do it better. And Isaac sat down that day and wrote his first hymn, and they sang it that next week in church, and it transformed worship as we know it. Because suddenly we started using personal testimonies as hymns, and rather than just being these corporate songs out of the Book of Songs, suddenly we had hymns that reflected our faith in action on a daily basis here on this earth. And it is, you know, I guess you could say we finally had New Testament hymns. In the past, we were just singing hymns from the Old Testament. A wonderful story. And there's all kinds of stories like that throughout the book.
Ace, our lines are packed. Let's go to Kathy in Lindenhurst, Illinois. You're on the air, Kathy.
Yes. I just recently watched a film on Eric Little on Wings of Eagles, and in it he sings he plays Be Still My Soul, and I went to look it up, the song, the verses, and I thought they were very inspiring. I wonder if you had anything to say about that song.
I think it's one of the most beautiful songs ever written. I didn't actually put it in this book. You know, we actually had 450 songs we started with, and then started whittling them down based on a variety of different song stories. And that didn't make that cut. But when you look at that song in particular from a personal standpoint about it hitting you personally, when you sit down and listen to it, I encourage people who have not heard it to put their headphones on and block out the whole world and listen to the lyrics, because I think it's some of the most profound and inspirational lyrics I've ever heard in my life. So I'm on the same page you are about my feeling about that song.
Thank you, Kathy, for the call here. We've got a quick break. We'll come back to more of your phone calls. Ace Collins is our guest today here on Crosstalk. And by the way, if you'd like to obtain the book, you can go to vcy.com, vcy.com, or call 1-888-722-4829. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. In Christianity Today, in October of 1960, then FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover wrote an article in Christianity Today warning America's pastors that their pulpits were a target by the communist. He warned them the communist would use masking terms to bring them along and aid them in furthering the communist ideas and philosophies. He said they will do this in many ways, but one of them is by using terms like, well, we're just about love and justice, the brotherhood of men. Let's not fight. Let's work together. We're about peace and economic justice and civil liberties. My friends, this is exactly what's happening today. It's out in the open. And now communist promoting guys are openly penetrating the church in America with front groups, just as J. Edgar Hoover warned.
stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. Ace Collins, the author, with us today here on Crosstalk and taking your phone calls. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. We have Arlene who is calling in. Hi, Arlene. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I wondered if he's got blessed assurance in the book, and does he know why that people don't anymore seem to sing out those old hymns joyously like they did in the 50s?
I don't have blessed assurance in the book, but I can give you my theory on why people do not sing hymns the way they used to. And I think a lot of it is due to the fact that we don't open up our hymnals and sing anymore. Everything's printed on walls. And I think, you know, on video screens, and hence you do not have the breakdown. You used to go to church a generation ago, and the congregation would not be singing in unison. They would be singing in various parts because they were raised to sing alto, soprano, tenor, and bass. And I think when we went to a more praise and worship style, we lost that to a large degree. We all sing in unison, which, if you look at church history, that's pretty much what they were doing 1,000 years ago with Catholic chants. I think we will go back to the old hymns. I don't think they're going away. I think they're too good. And the thing that makes the old hymns, I think, so important is the fact that each one of them has a complete story in it that is a sermon in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Arlene, for the call. James in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, Ace, my question is, have you ever heard of When Answers Aren't Enough?
I have not. That's a new one to me.
Okay.
But it sounds a great deal like Further Along, which is in this book, when we just don't have the answers to certain questions. And I do have Further Along in the book. And that is probably based on your title there, probably very much like the same theme that you find in the song that you mentioned.
For all of us wannabe stars, how do we get a hold of these old songs? Have you got besides Day Wind?
The songs are out there. You know, one of the things I talk about in the introduction to the book, everything that's in my book, in this book right here, you can actually go to YouTube and listen to. I have several people who are reading a song a day and going to YouTube and listening to their favorite artists do that song. And I think that's one of the best ways to use the book in a way.
Yeah, and James, that's the kind of music we feature here through VCY America. You'll hear many of the old hymns of the faith as well that come through this broadcast station. Thank you for the call. We've got Jay is calling next. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Hi, man. I just wanted to thank you guys for having the show today. I love the hymns. I wanted to ask Ace, who wrote I Can Face Tomorrow? Because he lives, I Can Face Tomorrow. I have a dear friend in Virginia, T.K. Wellington, that just loves that song, and she'd like to know the history of it. And Jim, thanks again for playing the hymns every day.
But I can tell you the history anyway, because it's Bill Gaither, and he's a friend of mine. What it amounts to is Gaither was inspired. You're going to love this. He was inspired by a parking lot to write this song. They had paved over a piece of ground, and it was during a turbulent time in America, and they had paved over a piece of ground to make a parking lot, and suddenly out of this middle of this parking lot, this twig of grass grew. And it inspired Bill and Gloria Gaither to go back and write Because He Lives. In other words, you cannot, no matter how much you pave over the soul, it's still there, and if your faith is there, it can break through anything and live. And so that is a thumbnail version, and I've got that in a book called Hymns That Inspire America that I wrote for HarperCollins several years ago. And that is a wonderful story that from one of the master scribes of our generation, Bill Gaither.
Thank you for the call here, Jay. Again, the book it contains stories behind the songs and hymns about heaven. And it sounds like, Ace, if you had your choice, this would have been about 3-4 times bigger than what it is.
I lost a lot of songs in the process of putting it out. And, yeah, we had over 400 that we outlined that we took out of the book. But it's a situation where I think the publisher made the right decision on the 30 they put in, because I think it really does embrace a lot of the different emotions. And more importantly, I think each one of the 30 stories is different and therefore offers us a if you will, a block for building another foundation in our faith.
Yeah, indeed. And friends, again, I just want to make mention, again, some of the songs, When the Morning Comes, When the Roll is Called Up Yonder, very, very interesting story there. I wish we had time to get into it. Child of the King, also very interesting story there. Some 30 different hymns and songs about heaven. It's available. It's a hardback book. Again, it's just over 230 pages. And does feature 30 songs, and normally is $14.99. However, through November 30th, our bookstore has featured this as one of their books of the month, and as such, that's 50% off through November 30th. It's $7.50 plus any applicable tax or shipping, but you can go to vcy.com, that's vcy.com, or by calling the bookstore 414-463-1770 or 1-888-722-4829. Again, that's 1-888-722-4829. And you can just request the book, Stories Behind the Songs and Hymns About Heaven. And we're going to squeeze one final call in from Salisbury, Maryland. Lois, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Oh, my goodness. I listen to your program all the time, and this is just so wonderful. I went to a gospel concert last night, which was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if the gentleman is familiar with a song called Give Me Jesus, which they play on Rejoice Radio often.
Okay. Lois, thank you. We have just 60 seconds here, Ace. Are you familiar with Give Me Jesus?
I am familiar with it. I do not know the story behind it. It's not in the book, but it is a wonderful old song. By the way, for you, all of you people who are listening, this is really the best deal I've heard on this book. I can't buy it that cheap as an author. And so you're having an opportunity to even get it below offer rates. And so if you want the book, this is definitely the way to buy it right now through y'all. So y'all are offering a wonderful opportunity to have the book. I'm tempted to order three or four just for me.
Great. Thank you, Lois, for the call. And folks, again, they worked out the arrangement with the publisher just for this one given month, so it all ends November 30th. Well, Ace, this has been very inspirational, and thank you for taking time to write the book and to research the stories, and just to be a blessing to so many who are going through times of hurt by giving us that joy and the victory that lies ahead.
Well, God bless you all. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Great. Ace Collins, our guest here today on Crosstalk. Again, folks, take advantage of it. It ends November 30th, vcy.com, or call 1-888-722-4829. What a day of rejoicing that will be. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.